Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for January 19th in Grover Beach. And if we could have a roll call, please.
Mr. Brunet?
Here.
Member Lee?
Here.
Chairman Hagman?
Here.
Member Waggy?
Here.
And Mr. Brown?
Here.
Member Ikeda?
Here.
And Member Gehring?
Here.
Thank you. At this time, we'd open it up for public comment for comment on any items that are not on the agenda.
Very odd.
Are you going to be public now?
Yes.
Okay.
To start off.
Behave yourself.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mark Hutchinson. I'm the Deputy Director for the County Public Works Department. It's not on your agenda, but I wanted to give you a quick state water update because of the relationship between Zone 3, the distribution system, the state water system using the same pipelines, and also because many of your agencies are also state water subcontractors. The Department of Water Resources notified the county yesterday, I believe, that they are upping the allocation from 45% to 60% of the Table A. That would leave 15,000 acre feet of state water available to the County of San Luis Obispo and subcontractors. Given that our subcontractors have a total of 4,830 acre feet, there will be more than adequate state water for all of those subcontractors in calendar year 2017. This, however, is subject to adjustment by the Department of Water Resources, but they indicate that their expectation, if weather patterns in the northern part of the state even return to average from above average, we could see further increases in that allocation. The other update is on the State Water Emergency Program. You'll recall that district staff is working on a program in concert with Santa Barbara County, Central Coast Water Authority, to exchange wet water for capacity in Santa Barbara County's portion of the water pipeline in order to be able to deliver additional state water to San Luis Obispo County entities, at least those that are connected through infrastructure to the state water project. On December 13th, we took the first agreement in a series that are required, which was between CCWA and the County of San Luis Obispo to the Board of Supervisors that laid out the basic parameters of the exchange program between the two agencies. That was one day after Department of Water Resources called us all together on a conference call and said they were having second thoughts. So DWR has decided that rather than do a 10-year program, 5 years of exchange possibilities with another additional 5 years to recover the exchange, they would like to see a 1 year only. They don't like the idea that we could exchange stored water in San Luis Reservoir. They want to see a real-time exchange on a month-by-month basis so that if we were to exchange water with Santa Barbara County, they would be using their share at the same time that San Luis Obispo County is using our share. There are adjustments we can make in our operations to accommodate that. It is a bit more difficult for Santa Barbara County, but they believe they also can accommodate that. So we have a draft agreement, revised agreement between the two agencies that staff is comfortable with. We've submitted that to Department of Water Resources. They've produced a draft agreement. We've made comments. We're now waiting on the state to produce the second of the multiple agreements to allow us to make the exchange. That's phase one of the program. Phase two is to determine how, when, and why that water would be delivered within San Luis Obispo County. That involves the subcontractors within our county that take state water. That group meets on a regular basis and, in fact, met this morning. We walked through some outlines and concepts for the emergency program, which was fairly well received by the group, and we intend to keep working with them so that we can eventually bring the program within San Luis Obispo County also to the Board of Supervisors. Ultimately, there will be some sort of a contract amendment among the district and those subcontractors to implement the program. And obviously with the rains and the reservoirs filling up a bit, it takes the pressure off a little. However, as I reminded the team, when we presented this to the board, the intent was for the district to get us in a position where we could respond to a water supply emergency with state water well in advance of it actually happening. If we end up needing to do the exchange, we're good. If we don't need to do it, we need to be prepared just in case. So we fully intend to move forward as rapidly as possible to get the program in place. Even if it's not necessary this year or next, having the outlines of it, the agreements, and the relationships established would go a long way among our water agencies and assist with the regional planning that we are now doing at a staff level throughout the county. So that's really the state water update there. Plenty of water available, no shortages this year. There are things happening in the Delta that could reduce our stored water, but we've discussed that at length with the subcontractors, and they can report back on how all of that works. So that's my update.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions of Mr. Hutchinson?
I have one. Tim? If you do the one-year program, is the hope that if it's successful that it would go to a five-year or 10-year program?
We would hope. The idea is to move forward and be positioned with everything that we can get. If we need to make changes, we would press DWR to make those changes. If it works, if we're able to demonstrate that it works in 1 year and can demonstrate that it would be better for all involved to add some years to it, we'll certainly press for that. We're at a bit of a disadvantage right now. DWR's longtime director has retired. So the sailors on that ship are sticking close to the letter of the contracts and not being particularly innovative at this point. But it is our intent to keep the contact going. And I can tell you that staff at CCWA has been particularly aggressive on this one, rather disappointed with DWR. So we've got a good advocate there, and both counties are working well together as we respond to DWR.
Thank you.
I just had a question. Are the indications that San Luis Reservoir is going to spill? I know all these stored water things go away if it spills. I wonder if they just let it spill to make them go away.
The latest reports from DWR is that they have a higher probability of spill this year. And if it were to spill, there's a hierarchy and a percentage of stored water there now that does go away. We're working on to the details to identify how that affects San Luis Obispo County and our subcontractors in a number format, but definitely a higher risk of spill, simply because that mode of operation benefits the majority of the state water contractors. It's to the detriment of San Luis County, but we're the only one in that category.
And we're so small, they don't really care much what we think anyway, probably.
That's accurate.
That's only a judgment. We're the small potatoes. I was just curious. I know Pismo Beach does not have any stored water there, so we're okay, but I was just curious. Thank you.
Mr. Gehring.
Mark, where do we stand on the capacity issue, use of Santa Barbara's capacity in the pipeline?
We're close to an agreement with them, the same basic terms. 1 acre foot of water in exchange for 1 acre foot of capacity.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Seeing no other public comment, yes, ma'am, please.
Hi, Patty Welsh from Arroyo Grande. I have a question to ask you guys. You're up here mentioning DWR, I believe, were the initials. If you guys wouldn't mind, I'm not real familiar with the initials that you're using. If you could kind of state what they are, just so I can follow a little easier, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
We will do that. Thank you very much. We are a little too deep into this, and I know I tend to do the same thing. And board members have asked me repeatedly to at least define your acronyms before we jump into it. So thanks for the reminder.
And DWR is?
Department of Water Resources, State Department of Water Resources, which is the parent agency that essentially manages the water systems within California, with some help from others, but they're one of the main agencies. All righty, next item is the approval of the minutes of the November 17th meeting. If any committee members had any comments on those minutes?
Just one minor spelling thing. First paragraph, R-O-L-E should be R-O-L-L, roll, called roll.
Thank you.
And then I had one that I think is correct. In the first paragraph, We were in Pismo Beach.
All right.
As opposed to Grover. Weren't we? I've slept since then, so I'm not sure.
I believe we were. Yeah. Thank you.
I missed that.
Any other committee members with comments? Not, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll move approval as revised.
Second by Bard. Would you like to do roll call vote?
No, we don't need to do roll call.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Next up is the operations report.
Yes, and this report is dated the 17th of January. So as of January 17th, we had 466.55 feet of water. Our storage was 14,088 acre feet of water. We're at 29% capacity. The rainfall to date as of the 17th was 17.86 inches. The Lopez Water Treatment Plant production was 2 million gallons per day, MGD. Our downstream release was 1.9 MGD, and the state water is 1.5 MGD.
And on that same item, I just wanted to remind the members of the committee that the website slowcountywater.org has been updated. There's a button there. Actually, if you go to slowcountywater.org, you'll see an opening page that looks like 1985. If you push the button in the right upper corner that says real-time water information, it becomes 2017. And so we have actual live information about all kinds of stuff in the South County. I would encourage you to explore that. For instance, we just gave you a reservoir level update. I can tell you that as of 17 minutes ago, reservoir storage was 14,219.1 acre feet at 28.8%. and 466.90 elevation. There's also graphs there that you can look at to get the last 2 days, 7 days, 30 days, or the last month. It's an excellent tool. I very much encourage everyone to explore that website, especially the drop-down tab for dashboards. If you look at the South County dashboard, we'll give you all of our rain and stream gauges, last 24 hours of rain, and tidal information. So you can see what exactly is happening in the creeks along with all of the alert levels. It's a great tool. On the topic of downstream releases, you may have noticed there was an interest from the public, fishermen especially, about why there's water coming out of the dam. I'm going to ask Andrea to hand this to the end. This is a list of frequently asked questions that we've prepared and are making available to all the agencies. Just in short, to give you the short answer to that question, we release water from the dam because it's required under the California Fish and Game Code, the U.S. Endangered Species Act, and the water rights for downstream users. And although it looks like a lot of water going out of the dam, 3 cubic feet per second, 1.9 million gallons a day, that's 5.95 acre feet a day. In the last 15 days, the reservoir inflow and rainfall in the reservoir has been 3,192 and a quarter acre feet. Doing the math on that, it shows that 97.2% of the water in the inflow is stored and kept in the reservoir, and we've released 2.8%. Also to remind the committee, I dug through the records. This is from 2007. It's a document called the Interim Downstream Release Schedule. That was adopted by the Board of Supervisors on recommendation of this committee and all of the member agencies that describes how we're going to operate the reservoir, especially during the winter months, to satisfy those legal requirements and at the same time save as much water as possible. Releasing 3 cubic feet per second is exactly in line with the IDRIS, Interim Downstream Release Schedule. So it's turned out to be an excellent document for moving forward. We do, however, typically increase downstream releases in the summertime, again, to meet those water rights and habitat needs. But we think that based on the document, again, that your committee endorsed and recommended and the board adopted, The project is doing a good job being able to save that 97% of the water that's coming into it. We did manipulate the valve about in the middle of that 15-day period to see if we could squeeze a little more. We saw an immediate response from the upper part of the stream, probably the upper mile or so above Biddle Park, a loss of stream flow. When I was out there Monday with the reporter looking at 3 CFS at the dam, quarter mile downstream, half mile downstream at Rodriguez Road, we're actually still losing water to groundwater underflow at that point. Now, obviously, by the time it gets to the ocean, the flows are up well over 100 cubic feet per second due to tributaries and whatnot. So what really our critical area is the upper part of the stream when we do releases. And we seem to be right on point for keeping it wet with just the right amount of water so there's no waste. But again, we've prepared that frequently asked questions and added some extra detail so that everybody can understand the whys and wherefores of that.
Great. Appreciate that, Mr. Hutchison.
I have one question, too. CFS?
Please. Cubic feet per second. I have one of those wonderful tables somewhere in my binder that does cubic feet per second, per hour, per day, acre feet. So more numbers and acronyms than we really need.
Thank you.
Brad.
Jim.
I thought the committee might be interested in seeing how that the latest data point of lake elevation plots on the exhibit you got in here.
Thank you, sir.
In your package. So you'll see on there a little red line coming off the green line showing where the lake is today. Just a matter of interest.
Yep. We got to see if Jim's matches our revised one.
He's off by probably a few.
Well, I'm
maybe 100 feet because of.
Same thing.
Climbing
yeah,
a replacement.
Here's the more descriptive. I'll give you mine just in case. You're ahead.
Just a little bit. You're ahead of us. Can you pass those out, I guess? I think that's our next item.
It's nice to see the lines
I don't know,
going
it's in
up
there twice.
Instead of down.
Thank you.
It matches up.
And so you've got two handouts revising the projected reservoir levels, and fortunately consistent.
Okay. He's got an update.
Two different kinds of machines generated those. That's item B. So you can see a substantial bump up in the reservoir with more rain on the way. And the rate of increase inflow in the dam is starting to trend upwards. Went up obviously quite a bit in the last 2 weeks, started to flatten off a little bit. And based on this afternoon's rains, morning and afternoons, is starting to, that curve is moving upwards again. Indication that the watershed is well saturated, which means runoff into the lake.
Which is a great note based on our rains last year, and we were so optimistic and we hardly got a bump because of the soils
Correct.
Were so dry. So
we note on the same graph, you can look back 1 year to January of 2016 and see where the green line started to trend up with even less rain. And then this year, or last year, more rain than we've had so far, and then this year you see a much steeper gradient going up. I would note if the reservoir passes the 15,000 acre foot line, that's one of the trigger points in the LRRP, so we'll certainly be at the tack with a discussion and recommendations on how to respond to that under adaptive management, or whether they recommend that we let the LRRP control in adjustments in municipal deliveries and downstream releases. Because it is, I think, a 10% reduction point for the municipalities at that point.
Right.
And if we get to the 20,000 acre feet, that's where we're out of the low reservoir response plan,
yeah.
LRRP.
Well, the low reservoir response plan is interesting. It has two triggers. 20,000 acre feet and a declaration of emergency.
Okay, it has to be
by the board.
Too.
So we would have to undo both.
Okay.
But again, there's also the opportunity for adaptive management And that's been discussed at the TAC as to how that undoing would do. We foresee there might be a situation, and it relates to the groundwater supplies available to the Zone 3 agencies as well, that maybe the state says the drought is over, you know, that map, we're not dark red anymore. Lopez is at 21,000 acre feet. The Board of Supervisors wants to rescind their emergency declaration, but we are still concerned about groundwater level for the Zone 3 agencies. We could foresee a recommendation from your committee to maintain the emergency declaration for Zone 3 so that the LRRP remains in effect.
Okay.
But again, all of those discussions go on in great detail at the TAC. They do a great job of tracking those things and looking at all the options and opportunities.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Jeff?
And just a clarification, Mark, if you would. The Zone 3 deliveries at the moment are under a, lack of a better term, an agreement to, because we were anticipating getting down to the 10,000 level. So we're actually at the 10,000 level voluntarily at the moment, correct? For deliveries? Am I misunderstanding that?
I don't think so. I think we're still at the 15.
I realize that, but I think we were anticipating getting to the to 10,000 before the end of the end of the rain year or the
rain year. May I speak? I think that we revised that to project that we would be hitting the 10,000 mark in February if we didn't have any rain.
Right. So in which case we'd be at the 20% reduction before the end of the water year.
Right.
So okay.
Which is interesting. I think through adaptive management, now that you remind me, that the agencies are at a 20% reduction
right.
because your conservation measures exceed that.
I think that is true for at least several of the agencies, if not all, that voluntarily or wanted to get ahead of it and not have to say,
right.
oh, gee, we're at 10,000. I needed to save 20%, and I'm already blew past it.
Yeah.
So there was some discussion, and there usually is every month at the TAC about that.
Yeah, and I imagine the TAC will discuss current reservoir levels, especially if they're above 15, in relation to the agency's other water supplies, and determine whether or not it's appropriate to reduce or bump up the Lopez deliveries, right, back to a 10% reduction, even if it means being able to allow the groundwater to recover better or different things, or for some agencies.
Jim?
I did have one comment. To remind some of the committee members, I live in the watershed above the dam by about 6 miles, and I have a seasonal creek that goes past my house. I've been there 21 years so far, and it's my experience that at about 17 inches, the creek would begin to run if we'd been having a series of average years. So last year, we had 21 inches at my house. The creek did not run, had not run since 2010. This year, the creek began running last week at about 17 inches, and it was running at about 1,500 gallons per minute past my house. But by the time you walked a quarter mile down onto my neighbor's property, the creek had gone into the ground. So, and today the creek's dry at my house. So I don't think we want to go saying, well, the drought's over, the groundwater is full, because that indicator would say that we still have quite a long-term cumulative deficit to overcome. But we're happy to have the rain.
Right. Thank you, Jim. Any public comment on the operations report items?
I have a question, if I could.
Please, Mr.
Just a curiosity question more than anything. I noticed that Nacimiento increased at a much more rapid rate than Lopez, and I'm assuming that's because they're different watersheds. Is there a watershed map for Lopez that I could look at? Or?
Yes, we do have watershed maps for Lopez. I can make that available. Leave your email, and I'll get that to you. It's actually shows the watershed above and below the dam and those things.
Right.
Yeah, the difference in the reservoirs really is the watershed. You know, Nacimiento turns north along the backside of Big Sur and gets a tremendous amount of rainfall.
Yeah.
Much higher rain rates.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Make a note.
Okay. All right. That'll conclude operations report. We'll move on to the information items. And first up is the first draft of the proposed.
Hello.
Hello.
Christy Smith, County Public Works Finance. I'm here tonight to distribute the fiscal year 2017-18 proposed budget for Flood Control Zone 3. So just a little bit about it. Next week, I'll mail out the budget books to the Zone 3 Finance Committee, and they will be distributing their hard copies to their city managers and other related staff. And also next week, everybody on the Zone 3 contact list, that's all of your committee and alternates and the TAC and their alternates, will receive a PDF for the book. So let me just pass these out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christy.
Are they still warm right off the press?
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Just a quick review of our annual process for the budget. The TAC has discussed and finalized the capital outlay section. At their next meeting on February 2nd, the TAC will receive the budget books and have another opportunity to discuss. On February 21st, I will meet with the Zone 3 Finance Committee, and we're going to review the proposed budget. I would encourage you to meet with all of your Finance Committee members and discuss any issues you may have prior to that meeting. Then on March 16th, I'll be back here at the advisory committee meeting to give a brief presentation of the budget and ask for your endorsement. After it's endorsed by your committee, the Zone 3 budget will go to the County Board of Supervisors in mid-June for adoption. Very briefly, the 2017-18 budget reflects an overall increase of 2.7% in billings to your agencies. Much of the proposed increase is due to a potential increase in chemicals for the pH suppression project and an anticipated services contract for Paul to consult on health check items. Also, the utilities division labor budget was increased due to the addition of a new engineer who's going to be dedicated to the Zone 3 and their issues. The routine O&M billings are up 8.1%, but that's offset by reductions in the non-routine O&M. And capital outlay billings are at the customary $550,000 level. So I'll see you in March for my presentation. Do you have any questions?
Jeff? Just one quick question.
Sure.
Can you remind us who the Finance Committee members are?
Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
I think I have them with me. Contacted Nadia Fieser at City of Pismo Beach, Debbie Malicote for City of Arroyo Grande, Gail Chapman, City of Grover Beach, and Carrie Cassiola at Oceano CSD. And I currently didn't have a CSA 12 contact for that group. Do any of you have information or someone to contact? That's us. Well, no, another finance. That's us. Okay.
Yeah.
I had John Wallace down on an old list. So.
Chairman Hayman.
Okay.
You've taken over
that position.
As far as the CSA 12 rep, and unfortunately CSA 12 runs pretty lean, but Mark makes an interesting point.
Okay.
Of is whether that's a county.
That is a county service area. So
I just didn't want to miss anybody.
Yeah,
in our
no, I appreciate the thought, but I also appreciate not having another meeting. So.
Okay.
you'll get the bill anyway.
You can advise me.
Turn to buy lunch for that.
I'm not buying. All right. Is that everything? Any more questions?
Any other questions? Any questions from the public?
No. I'll see you in March then.
Thank you. Next item is the climate update.
Yeah, so I usually have some slides. I didn't prepare any slides for today, but if you could turn to page 9 of your packet, we'll take a look at the U.S. drought monitor. So just as we were mentioning a few minutes ago, the county is still in an exceptional drought condition, but looking at the state of California, you know, compared to July of last year, it looks a lot better. And we've been having a lot of rain, as you know. And then on the next page is the temperature forecast. So compared to January of last year, we have equal chances of below, above, and average temperatures. Not much has changed there. It's how it is every month. And as far as the precipitation forecast goes, the map for January is dated December 2016. So a lot has changed in the past few weeks, as you know. So right now it says equal chances of rain, but I think that that's probably more like above average if you're taking a look at the past 5 or 6 years of rain. So that's my update. Any questions?
I just have an editorial comment. The graph for the January forecast was December 31, 2016. There were other people who were forecasting that atmospheric river was going to happen, and this graph completely missed the point. It just blew it. It says equal chance in our area for above or below precipitation. We're having not record, but substantially higher than average precipitation. And I'm just saying it's hard to believe this graph when the huge amount of rain started happening shortly after it was published.
Really, I know that this was only about 3 weeks ago.
Right, and at that time, they knew this thing was starting. There were other people who said, other models said, it's this big atmospheric river is going to form, the Pineapple Express, whatever, and they missed it. Just editorial comment.
Yeah.
Don't believe what you have in front of you on these long-range forecasts.
However, I did listen in on a couple of National Weather Service and NOAA webinars.
Oh, okay.
And they did talk about the atmospheric river, but that was just about a week and a half ago. So, yeah, it took them a little while, but.
I did read before that studies showed this was going to form right at the time they were saying no equal chance above or below.
Yeah.
Just curious. Just editorial comment about long-term models.
Right.
Okay, that's all. It's off my chest.
Any other comments?
I had a question for Andre. Any public comments? Not seeing none. Thank you, Andrea.
You're welcome.
Capital projects update. We have a written report. Mark, you're going to?
Yes, we do have a written report.
Talk a little about that.
And I am a definite fill-in on this report. Neither Mr. Roberts nor Jill Ogren are able to be with us tonight due to other commitments and last-minute illness. In looking at the report, I think we can go through them very quickly, but the big news is nothing's going sideways at this moment. The capital projects program is on track. It's meeting its time frames. We have, as you know, made budget adjustments along the year to deal with water quality issues due to low reservoir levels, and those have been through your committee and the TAC. So things are moving ahead quite nicely. You can see that the intake and operations assessment, I was looking at the intake structures and the level to verify at what level, how low could we go in the reservoir. There was a report to the TAC. I think Jim could give details if we want them, but I think the good news is we think we can get draw the reservoir, if we had to, down below the previous number, which was 4,000 acre feet. The lowest intake is at 1,700 acre feet in storage, and we believe we can get water out of the reservoir down to 1,700. Asterisk on that, obviously, we saw water quality issues late in this last year because of the concentration of salts in the water, raising the pH and causing problems. That project is well on the way to be able to do pH correction at the treatment plant so that happens again. But then again, we have to be on the lookout for other unforeseen issues with water quality, but so far good news. The variable frequency drive replacement is completed, so those worn out and prone to failure large electrical equipment that starts the large motors are updated. That V ditch adjacent to the spillway, that's a surface ditch along the spillway that grabs surface water, keeps it from eroding the dam along the concrete. They meant by flushing is that V ditch also has under drains that get plugged. So those have been all cleaned out. to the satisfactory of the Department of Safety of Dams from the state agency that pointed that out. And then terminal reservoir, you know, we bring water from the main lake to the reservoir next to the treatment plant, and the pipe going from there into the treatment plant needed repair as it related to the terminal reservoir dam. Also a note on a DSOD, Department of Safety of Dams inspection checklist, that's fixed. A little correction, turnout SCADA project. I'm fairly certain that remounting the panel to integrate the Oceano radio. We communicate with the system controls and data acquisition, the SCADA system via radio to Oceano, and the panel need to be adjusted to make that work better. They're going to get out there, or they have been out there, and our county programming folks have also been out there, so that should be well on the way. Membrane strainers, that's a stainless steel strainer device. It's actually about 3 feet in diameter. There's two of them. They're original to the new plant. When we were replacing the sixth rack addition, the membranes, discovered bits of rust in the membranes. It should not be there. And found that the stainless steel strainers, although they lasted 5 years, were not all that good of stainless steel. So they need to be replaced along with the sixth rack. They're on their way here, and we'll get them installed, the system flushed, and then continue with the sixth rack so that we can better the operations of the plant. It doesn't run all six racks all at the same time, but the decision was made some time ago to go ahead and add the sixth rack. There was space for it to be able to operate at a smoother transition from high to low water rates. The coagulant feed alarm and meter, that is a piece of equipment that broke down. It's in your capital projects update because the county uses an accounting perspective that says if it costs more than $5,000, it's a capital project. Even though we have very few things of any importance at the plant that cost less than $5,000. So you get to see even the non-routine O&M replacement that's going on. The PLC, or the programmable logic computers or controllers, they sit on top of the racks. One of those wonderful things, you know, we have a proprietary system for our membranes from the Paul Corporation. Each of the racks has a little computer that sits on top of it, and they talk to the main computer and to each other. When we got the sixth rack going, they said, by the way, your other five are out of date, and it won't talk to number six, and you can't get parts. Fine. So, added that to the project. That's well on the way. Parking and roadway resurfacing. It says in design, which sounds a little bit over the top, designing a parking lot and resurfacing it. What that really means is that the department's design division is the one that draws up the specifications for the contract. And to take advantage of a larger pavement management contract that the county does every year around the county, we have paving money, we'll simply add the resurfacing. Actually, I think it's a slurry seal of the parking lot to the larger contract and put all the specifications. So whatever contractor wins the bid for doing a lot of roads around the county will also take care of our parking lot. And then equipment audit and replacement. Looking at the strainers, looking at the PLCs and the need to be replaced, it was decided in consultation with the TAC, we need to get ahead of those kinds of things, figure out what equipment we've got out there, and identify those things that need to be replaced on a regular basis. We went through this with our computers and the computer system that controls the whole plant, discovering that our backup computer was out of date and actually wouldn't work. So the staff of the utilities division has undertaken an effort to look at all the equipment, get it on a schedule, get it programmed in so we know ahead of time, well in advance, when things are old and out of date and when they need to be replaced. And then a number of upcoming projects that you see there, partly out of the equipment audit and replacement. And then noting deferred projects, some things that we decided based on budgetary and priorities didn't need to be done right away. Improving the boat access, I think that's to the terminal reservoir.
And then the power monitoring, as you recall, a while back we had trouble with variable power coming from PG&E. And it's typical, not to diss PG&E and stuff. We said it was bouncing up and down. They said it wasn't. It damages big motors. They offered to come out and put a monitoring device. We said that would be good, but then they couldn't schedule it right away. So we hired local electric company to put the monitoring device on. And then PG&E ran out and fixed all the wires. So now the power doesn't bounce all over the place, so we're in good shape. So we decided we don't need to do the power monitoring expense at that point. And if you have any questions, hopefully I or some of the folks that were at the TAC can answer them on the capital projects update.
I do have one question. Lisa. Regarding the rust, was that about the strainer, the stainless steel?
Yes, the strainers themselves were rusting.
So were we looking at other suppliers?
I believe so. I think we're looking at some better verification of stainless steel parts. And as an aside, this has cropped up on some of our other systems, typically in hardware. You know, the Nacimiento project, when it was built, had a lot of stainless steel spec stuff. Parts arrived that the contractor bought. They were clearly marked, reputable suppliers, met the standards for high-quality stainless. They were installed, and then 3 months later, they were covered with rust. So counterfeit hardware is a big issue in the utility world. I'm not sure that's really the problem with the strainers, because they did last 5 to 6 years, but making sure that it's a high-quality part now and a confirmed supplier.
Is that their life expectancy is usually 5 to 6 years?
We expected them to wear from particulate damage, which we didn't have. So we think it was far below their life expectancy.
Thank you.
Just a couple comments, questions. Have you noticed any damage from all the storms to any of your equipment or processes or anything that could cause any service interruptions?
No, we're not seeing any damage to equipment and whatnot. The turbidity levels throughout the system, the lake and the terminal reservoir, are up.
Sure.
So backwashing more frequently and that sort of thing is happening. But that's consistent with all of our lakes and all of our water systems around the county. I'm not aware that we've had any notable damage from storms, you know, shorting out equipment or damaging or flooding or any
right.
of those things.
And the other, it's not really a capital equipment thing, but I understand that the item that came before some time ago to spend funds to fix that Carpenter Creek throughput, I think it's Carpenter Creek.
Yes.
That apparently worked well during all of this heavy rain. Is that correct?
It did. That bridge was replaced. The blockage was removed. Our major maintenance crews from the transportation division built a new bridge. Was down there beginning of last week. And Carpenter Creek was flowing complete full within an inch under the bridge and near at the top of the levees along the State Park campground there. Moving a lot of water out of the ocean and diverting it away from the Oceano Meadow Creek Lagoon and all.
So basically, portions of Oceano were less likely to flood because of this work?
We believe so. We did have flooding in the lower part of Oceano.
Right.
I think if it wasn't for that bridge, there would have been more houses than the one that had water in it that would have had water.
So it was money well spent?
So far.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Any other questions? Questions from the public? Yes, ma'am.
On the strainer, you stated that it didn't show the wear and tear you would expect and that it came from a reputable supplier and that you expected it, that it would have lasted longer. My question is, how much longer would have you expected it to last? And was there any kind of warranty on something like that if it comes from a reputable supplier? Thank you.
Okay. Those parts are warrantied from the supplier with the original construction, which is, 5 years ago or more? More than 5 years, almost 10 years that it did last. So it's well out of warranty. Those usually last something like a year for that kind
typical,
of equipment.
Typical, yeah, it was a year.
Yeah.
And you see typical, you know, it's stainless steel screen with small holes in it, so you expect to see those holes enlarge over time as microscopic and small particulates move through. We saw a little bit of that, but not to where the strainer would be unusable. The maintenance crews reported that they had in the past noticed some rust in the strainer bowls, but the bowls themselves are a cast iron and could have contributed some. But as it progressed, it became obvious recently that the rust was actually coming from the strainers themselves. Based on the amount of wear, it's hard to say, you know, would we've got another 5 years or 10 years out of them, but 10 years going out because of rust of the strainers themselves is unusual. I should say, as you know, we've treating water out of Lopez is sometimes a challenge, and our operators are very adept at adjusting all kinds of elements to get that water cleaned up. You know, our first treatment step in the plan is a dissolved air filtration with a carbon feed that causes everything to clump together. That is really unusual for a water treatment plant to have that step in front. It's because of the suspended debris in the water. So there is some possibility that the treatment processes above the strainers contributed to the rust, but you still don't expect stainless steel to rust. You could see a corrosion due to a chemical interaction, but not brown rust. But unfortunately, well out of any warranty that we had.
Thank you. All righty, seeing no other questions, maybe just a comment from me. The one project that's not on here, and we did talk about it briefly at the TAC, is the pH adjustment project, which I know is still being designed and worked on. The sense of urgency has gone down to some extent based on the quality of the water, as I recall at the TAC meeting, which is a good thing, but I don't think it's moved to the back burner. It's still one of the front projects. So just wasn't on this list.
I'll make a note to make sure that gets onto the list going forward.
Thank you, Mark. Alrighty, action items with no subsequent Board of Supervisors action required. We have none. On that item. And item 8 then is action items where Board of Supervisors action is subsequently required. And we have a request from AT&T to locate a cell tower.
And this will require a roll call vote.
Eventually. So, yeah, AT&T has contacted the district with a proposal to locate a new cell tower on district property at the recreation area. I think if you look at that colored map, it shows a very large parcel. The tower itself would be best description just off of Upper Lopez Canyon Drive at the top of the mountain behind the rec area. So if you're familiar with Upper Lopez Canyon, you know, it's Lopez Drive. Just before you see the entrance to the park, you make a right turn on High Mountain, go about half a mile, three quarters of a mile, and Upper Lopez Canyon makes a left and goes straight up onto the ridge, follows it behind, and then drops down into Wittenberg Creek over the hill and into Lopez Creek. Up at that first high point, AT&T would like to put a fairly substantial cell tower. It's a 60-foot monopine. It's a fake pine tree. And then with some smaller buildings around below. That is in the rec area. It's on what the Parks Department calls one of their, I think they call it their High Mountain Trail, which is actually a fire break. And then it's connected through a trail system down to the rec area, so people, usually horseback riders, can get up there and ride along on it. In order to get a cell tower, AT&T needs a land use permit issued by the county. In order to apply for their land use permit, they need the landowner to sign consent of landowner form to get their application accepted into the planning process. So in order to get the Board of Supervisors, who's the landowner, to decide whether they will or not let them apply to get a cell tower, We went to the TAC, and their recommendation is there to go ahead and move it forward, and now we're at your committee. And the question is, a recommendation to the board, should they or should they not allow AT&T to apply for a cell tower? If they do apply, my understanding is the application is made to the planning department. It would go to the county planning commission for a decision, with all of the normal land use permit notifications that you typically see, environmental document and whatnot. And that decision would be final at planning commission unless appealed to the board of supervisors. So in the question of landowner, the board will sit as the board of the flood control and water conservation district. And then if it's appealed to them, they would be the county board of supervisors deciding that. The way the county works is they would also need a lease agreement from the flood control and water conservation district. And that would be negotiated by a group of people called the Real Property Division in our Central Services Department. And they likely would negotiate the lease terms in parallel with the land use permit. We have contacted, obviously, the County Parks Department, given them the plans and asked for their opinion. They had some concerns about the location being on a trail and whether or not they'd have to reroute the trail and could people be that close to the cell tower. AT&T responded that they would gladly shift it over out of the way and that with their current systems, they have no problem with the public being in close proximity to their equipment. And that was really the end of the Parks Department's concerns, other than the obvious question of who gets the lease payments, which I imagine would come up at some point.
Money?
And I can give you an update on that if you'd like. Right now, the state of the art is that it's been the practice of the flood control district when we receive rents or income based on land within any of our zones, whether it's zone 3 or zone 9 or any of the others, that the money goes into the reserve funds of that zone. It would be similar to rents that the district receives for the residential units at the treatment plant. That money goes into what the budget calls district-funded reserves. So legally, it's part of the general reserves of the flood control district countywide, but as you know, many years ago, the board decided to segregate those pieces of those reserves for a couple of our zones, being Zone 3 and then Zone 9 in San Luis Obispo. So it would be in that fund. We do have, if you'll recall, a list of priorities for use of that money for a large piece of it. I imagine if that's how the lease money ended up, I'm told by Central Services that they would look for between $1,500 and $2,000 a month. So $24,000 a year sounds like a good sum. And then you look at how much a variable frequency drive costs and maybe not so much, but whatever we can do. Ultimately, the decision is the Board of Supervisors. And I think for Parks Department, our lessee, if you would, on the property, to make a case for getting some of the funding, we would want to see more information about exactly what their costs really are. AT&T does propose, if you look on the small print there, to put a new gate off of Upper Lopez Canyon Drive and convert part of that, actually quite a bit, several hundred feet of that fire break into a road. So we'd want to make sure that the trail that becomes a gravel road of some sort likely would be maintained by AT&T, so the trail access would not be, and then there would be no out-of-pocket money for parks or something like that. And that can be done through the land use permit and or the lease agreement. So at this point, the question is, did your committee, after some discussion, support or recommend to the board that they go ahead and move down the road of putting a 60-foot monopine on district property in Zone 3? I would imagine, and certainly open to your suggestion, that one of the questions for the board going into it just for efficiency's sake, is if they don't think that a cell tower in a county park, in this park at that location, is appropriate, it would be good for them to tell AT&T sooner rather than later. So that question's also on the table. But it may be the Parks Department the one advising the board on that. And so far, Parks hasn't raised an objection to the tower from that perspective at all. And my understanding is it's not going to be visible, if at all, from the rec area and most of the lake. You wouldn't be able to see that side of the ridge.
Thank you, Mark. To the committee members?
It's my understanding there's really not much cell coverage up there. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's our understanding, that AT&T talks about using it as a relay site of some sort to improve cell coverage, even on the downstream side of the dam. If you get up close to the dam, I mean, even out on the road, you start to lose signal pretty badly. And then I imagine it also would beam cell coverage out to the east.
At the TAC, that was a comment they made. They actually said this, the receptionist sucks at Lopez. That's what they said.
And when I've been out there, I would second that. Yes, I agree. I think just from a, the TAC, according to your report, did recommend moving forward on this, I understand.
Yes.
I also serve in the County Fire Safe Council, and we're big on putting in vegetation management, fire breaks, and so forth. I would ask that you assume during the planning process, CAL FIRE would get a say on this too.
Yes,
since you
definitely
mentioned the fire break, whatever gate they're going to put in needs to be coordinated with CAL FIRE.
Certainly, I think that's part of the land use. There's a standard.
But that would be standard through the review process, obviously.
Right.
I think also, before my public safety hat, I think the better cell coverage we can have, it doesn't sound like it's going to have any impact on the watershed per se. It's such a small footprint and benign footprint as far as I can tell. So there should be no water quality issue. There's money coming in. At least from my standpoint, it's a win for us and also for public safety. So I have no problem with it at all. I'd be prepared to support it.
I have a question real quick. It's
just
in terms of materials that they use for those monopines, because I remember in the old days it was like they stuck out like a sore thumb. Has the material gotten any better, more realistic?
I guess it's probably, I don't know that the materials have changed. And as you know, the problem with those is once you see one and understand what it is, then they all leap off the landscape into your face. I think it may be a bit of a sore thumb up on the ridge.
Is there any alternative that can be done in terms of just aesthetically?
I know that the aesthetics is one of the key things that the planning department looks at when they evaluate these things. And I know there's been suggestion in the past that in some locations they should ditch the pine, just put the metal pole up, paint it with a non-reflective gray paint, so it fades into the background, and let it go. I know the Planning Commission wrestles with that.
So they look at it anyway.
They do, but some people tend to think the fake pine trees are the way to go. By the way, I forgot to mention, it was mentioned to me in a staff meeting. The question came up, well, this is AT&T, and I have a Verizon phone, by the way, that doesn't work either. So are we going to get, Cellular One and Sprint and Verizon all wanting to put up a tree and a cell tower? And just to be frank, my first thought was, well, at $20,000 a pop a year, we could do a forest. That's not a bad idea. We'll just have to see how that goes, I think. Yeah, I don't. But as far as the tree versus something else, it's really a planning department. They have a team that does these things. And
can't they share space? I mean, my understanding is that they could share the same space.
Exactly. So share the same tree.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and again, the planning department, in some cases, they do what they call co-location, and in other situations, they don't or won't or can't. I'm not an expert on that.
Thank you, Chair.
Jeff?
Actually, kind of piggybacking off that discussion it looks like there is going to be multiple opportunities for various antennas and so forth, which would actually then lead to my question of Does the county or the flood controller, Zone 3, have a need for a repeater site up there for ourselves? And can we then, as part of the discussions or the lease negotiations, have Real Property Services potentially include that into the benefit? If we need one.
Yeah, my understanding right now is that the district is well set up for communication for the work that we do around the dam and the crews that work up there. And again, Parks Department hasn't expressed any issues. I don't know how they communicate with each other at the rec area, likely through a radio system. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get from Parks whether they think their park should have cell service or not. It doesn't seem to be part of their perspective on things. But it's a good point, and we'll certainly double check with the operators to see. But it could be as simple as if we have AT&T phones already, then we're good.
Gotcha. I do have a question. I think you've covered this a little bit regarding county parks and some of their concerns. Most of those has been alleviated as of now. Is the money something that's going to be an issue? And I think you talked about as far as our leases
mm-hmm.
or our lease with them. Is that something that can be vetted to see if there's anything in there?
We've reviewed the lease, which was updated in 2008, I think, which, by the way, coincided with the expiration of the Davis Country Recreation Act grant, 40-year grant. We turned over the operation of all of the facilities, the water and wastewater, to county parks for that recreation area. And when you review the lease, it's interesting. It's a very long list of things that parks is allowed to do and a list of things they're not allowed to do. And it also says that if parks ever abandons the site, the district can come in and take what we want and then require them to remove what we don't. There's no restriction at all on what the district can do on the land. So our only perspective on that was, well, if we leased it to them for a park and we were to do something that interfered with the overall mission of the park, then it might be appropriate to work on some sort of an adjustment to the agreement. But at this point, we don't see any need for the adjustment. We asked Park, does this interfere? And the idea of a tower there really wasn't a big deal. They were concerned that if they had to reroute the trail, it could inconvenience trail users. And I suppose that in further discussions, there might be a question about the quality of the park experience, but that's not something we can really measure.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other
committee members' questions? Seeing none, questions from the public? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion or recommendation.
I'll go ahead and make a recommendation that we provide our recommendation for support of the board authorizing a land use application as consent of landowner. Is that the right way to put that? So reading in the next steps that this is going to come back to us at some point, if this, assuming this moves forward, and then we can provide any support for the actual project itself, but supportive of the board acting as consent of land or providing its consent of landowner.
I'll second.
Any comments on the motion? And we'll do a roll call vote, but just to be clear, the Andrew and Tim are have not been what's the proper word?
Appointed
yet formally from the Board of Supervisors, so they will not be participating in the roll call vote.
Yes, that is correct.
Ready.
Okay, Member Lee?
Yes.
Chairman Hagman?
Yes.
Member Waggy?
Yes.
Member Ikeda?
Yes.
And Member Gehring?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark, Andrea, for that.
You're welcome.
So future agenda items, I think we normally look at that list, and if there are things we want to add, we can do that, or things we want to take off.
I have a question about the cloud seeding.
Yes, sir.
If I could.
Please.
I'm just curious on the timing of that. Is that something you guys were trying to do in this year or sometime in the future? Because the rainy season, you know, anyway.
Yeah, the timing
We are moving that project forward with an intent to be ready to seed clouds, if everything gets approved, the CEQA document and stuff, next year. Simply not time to get through the feasibility process. Study and the financing agreements. And we're now working as in partnership with Santa Barbara County and in coordination with Monterey County to see if we can make that thing go. So really timing next
Thank
year.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good question.
I do have one, and sure. Being again, first time here, as well as I attended the State Water Advisory Committee meeting today, that with the emergency water program that's going on within the county and with DWR, some of the challenges that are there, and I know there's the phase one and phase two, just that, and something I also ran on being newly elected is, you know, that all of our communities were so closely knit, we're here together, that there might be locally some opportunities, maybe something we can discuss here regarding, you know, water resources and how we can help each other maybe in certain ways.
Yeah, certainly there are a number of past efforts and ongoing efforts. This committee, for one, a lot of work gets done at the TAC level. If you talk with any of your staff people, they can tell you all of the things that group tackles. The county itself, at a staff level, convenes another acronym, the CWAT, Countywide Water Action Team. So water managers throughout the county meeting on a regular basis and looking at big issues, coordination issues, opportunities. The county recently, a couple years ago, I guess, established the Public Works Department, a new water resources division that works with the RAC and the Regional Water Management Group, which is part of the Integrated Regional Water Plan, to tackle these things. We'd be glad to sit down with any member and try to walk you through with who all these groups are. It tends to be all the same people. There's not that many of us on any side of the table. But a tremendous amount of work effort in the county recently about coordinating among agencies rather than everybody trying to do their own thing. Zone 3, from my perspective, has been a leader in agencies cooperating and coordinating together. It's gotten a lot of work done. Starting way back with this interim downstream release schedule, and then recently the updates to the low reservoir response plan. Tremendous amount of work. We've done contract waivers with the local state water contractors to make things work for everyone, and expect that to continue. But this committee tends to function as the center point and information flow back and forth to the board and vetting things to the public. Many opportunities in the Zone 3 committee to kind of look at the bigger picture, especially in the South County, about things are working. And county staff is always available to answer any questions or provide information, everything that we have for any committee member or any of your constituents who are asking about things.
Excellent. Good, thank you. That's a great point. I would second that. I've been around for a little while, doing some work in Monterey County for a number of years previous. And especially in the Zone 3, when things get tight, that's usually when a lot of times, you know, and thank heavens for the rain, but the group is very much municipalities even being nice to the ag people, for heaven's sakes. What's going on with that? So I think it is a very collaborative group, and I think everybody works hard to sort of see the other person's perspective. So I think that's great. Really a commendation to those that sit on these committees.
I had a little FYI.
Please. Thing.
Just this afternoon, I was down there in the Rio Grande Channel, just below the where Halcyon and Highway 1 meet there, and a little bit past that, they put, you know, they've done all kinds of sandbags and plastic work and everything, but I took a couple pictures and sent to Joe Phillips and Jill Ogren, and Joe called me back within about 20 minutes, and he was on his way down there to take a look. And then I just got a call. I then just got an email this afternoon, just before I got here, from Richard Rose from the county.
Yes.
And he said that they were had a crew down there. They were going to try and remove debris before this next storm hit. So But thank you to the county for being so prompt on it. I just noticed that there was the one place that it was really starting to plug up, and evidently they took care of it already. So it's great news. Thank you.
Yeah, we do have regular patrols out and depend on people to spot things. The patrols also noted the toe of the south levee at a point has an erosion spot. I signed emergency notifications before I started down here. So we should have a crew out there in the morning repairing about a 30-foot section of the levee with rock riprap, also to prepare for the weekend storms. Oh, absolutely. And obviously the county storm center will be open 24 hours over the weekend again. We have two teams, one from utilities that looks at the levees and the reservoirs and the dams, and another one, the transportation team, that's looking at all of the roads. And they're in coordination, obviously, with the sheriff, the highway patrol, and taking calls from the patrols that we have out and also public to get on and repair and keep an eye on these things. But certainly, if you see anything, have any questions, give us a call. You can even call the main desk, 781-5252, during working hours. That'll be answered and routed directly to the crews that need to take on the work.
Very good. I just wanted to recognize, I understand this is your last meeting, I wanted to say thank you for your service. And on a personal note, as I've been learning how to chair these meetings, I appreciate you saying, Brad, don't forget about the public comment. I think I got it now.
But please. This time you're 100% a public comment on every agenda. I know, I appreciate that.
But
After being elected mayor, I took on additional responsibilities. I no longer have time to contribute here. So, but Councilmember Marcia Guthrie will be coming to these meetings after she's appointed by the Board of Supervisors. So she'll be at the March meeting. This will be my last meeting. I'll keep my eyes on things, keep track of what's going on. I appreciate the collaboration I think we've had in this committee, as mentioned already. We work very well together. We're all in the same boat, and I hate to say it, we sink or swim together. No, I think we've been very collaborative and very helpful, especially during the stressful times. We had lots of water. It's easy to get along when the water is short. You have to work much better together than we have been, so I appreciate that. On another note, the city of Pismo Beach did declare a state of emergency. We have some erosion along Price Canyon Road. If you're going east from the city, just before the city limits, just beyond the point where we had some erosion before, we've got some money from the federal government under disaster declaration to repair that. Just beyond that, the slope is starting to fail. And we also had some erosion along the ocean on Ocean Boulevard. Some bluff erosion there too, and we thought it prudent to declare a state of emergency so we can funnel that to the county, because I'm sure we're going to have more damage, and hopefully if this does happen, then we might be eligible to get some additional funding for repair of those areas. That's it. Thank you. And again, I've enjoyed working with everyone on this committee.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate your service. Any other committee member comments?
Just one, if I could. So, and it's to one to thank Ed. So, and congratulate him on becoming mayor. And we'll miss you here. But also, did want to say thank you to the city of Pismo for taking the lead on the water reclamation regional project.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think that's going to benefit Zone 3, possibly directly and indirectly. So, but I know there's been presentations at each of the cities in the district. So with regards to updates on that, so I'm sure Ben or Ed, you would probably feel be available to give updates to the other members if they so desired that.
Sure. Well, yeah. The you mean right now or
no? No. Oh, just like okay. After, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm sure Ben Fine could do it. But for anyone new here, you know, you're certainly aware we've had a great effort trying to have a joint water recycling program, so we have everything in one place, with Pismo kind of ahead right now, so we're taking the lead. At some point we'll merge it together, be more efficient that way. And
I was just hoping you'd pay for the whole thing.
Our ratepayers might have an objection to that, so probably not.
You're welcome partners, though.
Yeah. You have some of the water, you'll pay for it.
All righty. With that, I think we can adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.